All right. Call to order the Bellevue City Council regular session for Monday, December 7th, 2015. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Mayor Bobbitt.
Here.
Deputy Mayor Wallace.
Here.
Councilmember Chalmanac.
Here.
Councilmember Lee.
Here.
Councilmember Robertson.
Here.
Councilmember Robinson.
Here.
Councilmember Stokes.
Here.
All right. Deputy Mayor Wallace, would you please lead us in the flag salute?
Please rise for the flag salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Wow.
No Alex.
All right. Next item we have is approval of the agenda. Is there a motion?
Move approval of the agenda.
Second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Agenda is approved. Now we have communications written and oral. Is that the sign-up sheet there? Thank you very much. All right. We have got, as always, 30 minutes for communications written and oral. It looks like the number of speakers we have tonight might exceed that, so I'm going to do a little quick math here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Because we have a very, very heavy agenda tonight, we have to discuss and adopt our budget for next year. I'm going to limit speakers to 2 minutes per person. Please take note, rather than three, so that we have an opportunity to hear from everybody. And I'm just going to roll right into it. When I call your name, please step forward, state your name and address for the record, and then give us your comments. And I appreciate your brevity tonight. So the first person is Susan Thomas.
Good evening. I don't know that I can do this in less than 2-3 minutes. My name is Susan Thomas, and I've lived at 12635 Northeast 2nd Street for 40 years. This is about the new Wilburton Elementary School. Our children both went to elementary school at Wilburton and Hyatt Junior Highs. Most Wilburton residents are very happy to have the new elementary school coming in, as our neighborhood is growing with young families and children. Wilburton's new school is to have an enrollment of 650 students, approximately 100 more than the international school on the other side of Wilburton, plus staff. Students will come from Wilburton, the Spring District, and downtown. We have two big concerns. First, the safety of children, and second, the bottleneck of traffic in our neighborhood. Most Wilburton students will not walk. Times have changed, and elementary school students are taken to school. Two major roads leading to the school, Northeast 2nd and 128th Northeast, have no sidewalks. People constantly speed on these roads, even with speed bumps, and making it unsafe for kids walking. Many international school students, both coming and going and at lunch, are going so fast they're airborne over these speed bumps. And parents in a hurry to drop kids off are way over the speed limit. It's a huge safety issue. Wilburton's already overburdened with traffic issues. Cut-through traffic, international school traffic, and speeding. All exits are plugged from the neighborhood, both AM and PM, at Southeast 7th, Main Street, and 124th and Northeast 8th. This will only increase with completion of the Spring District. At times, we're prisoners in our own neighborhood. The currently proposed entrance and egress from the new school is to be directly onto Main Street. There are to be 60 or so spaces for pickup. Parents will not wait for these spaces to open. They'll park in the botanical gardens and the Wilburton Park lots, forcing kids to cross Main Street, a very busy street. Parents may possibly park and wait for kids in the business complex on Northeast 1st, adjacent to the new school. An entrance on Northeast 1st Street has been rejected as being too long and too expensive, but residents feel this is the best solution.
Okay, Ms. Thomas, I apologize for rushing you, but could you please, could somebody from staff please work with the community on the process, because we've had some success in the past working with neighborhoods and schools when they were planning all. This is not the first school that's been planned. Luckily, there's been quite a lot of experience, and we've done a pretty good job, I think, of resolving community concerns around the school rebuild. So I hope that we can connect you so that we can make sure there's somebody helping with these issues.
Thank you.
All right. Next, we have Masao Yamada. Good evening and welcome.
Hi. My name is Masa Yamada. I'm with the Bellevue Boys and Girls Club in Lake Hills, so 15228 Lake Hills Boulevard. And I'm basically here to introduce our Youth of the Year, who's going to be competing this year on this Thursday on a statewide competition that we're hoping he reaches the regional level. And when you reach a regional level, you get to really participate in some amazing things. He'll get to meet, you know, the President of the United States. He gets to go to the White House. So I just want to introduce Caleb Thome real quick, and he'll give a quick story on his basically experience with the Boys and Girls Club.
Welcome.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Caleb Thome. I'm a current junior at the International School of Bellevue. I've been part of the Bellevue Boys and Girls Club program since I was in sixth grade, so it's about 5 years now. And I've been I'm currently the longest member of the music advisory program, led by Jason Clackley and Jen Gavola, who also work at the Bellevue Boys and Girls Club. And the goal of music advisory, and I guess why I got nominated in the first place for Youth of the Year, is that our goal is to engender a passion in music for teens in Bellevue and really give them an opportunity to express themselves in their own way through the guidance of counselors who are experienced in the music industry and programs involving music production and the performance of music. And currently, a couple of things that we do in the music advisory program is we put on concerts. We meet every Thursday at 5 p.m. at the Lake Hills Boulevard Teen Center. We plan concerts. We implement our ideas and our styles of music into these concerts. We hire local bands. Some bands are touring. And all the profits for these concerts, these $5 or with a can of food or $6, they go towards the music advisory program, or they go to the touring bands and bands in Bellevue, profiting, you know, kids in Bellevue to kind of spark an interest in the music industry. And we also have a screen printing program. We produce our own magazine. We're putting on an art show in January to really allow kids to open up their artistic abilities and talents that schools don't exactly let them exposed to the community. And it's a really good program. And I guess the reason I was nominated is that I've been working really hard with this music program and really trying to get kids in Bellevue really interested in not just all this hip hop stuff that they hear on the radios, but the music that their friends like and want to produce themselves. And that's what the music advisory program really, that's their main goal, is to get kids interested in music and music production and to really allow kids in Bellevue to express their musical abilities. So thank you.
Fantastic. And congratulations to
you.
And good luck at States. Go get them.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Timing was perfect too, by the way. That's a skill. Okay. Next we have Mr. Mike Everett.
Good evening. My name is Mike Everett. My wife of 50 years and I have lived in our home for the last 41 years at 4502 Somerset Boulevard Southeast in Bellevue. Our family owned and operated Everett Motors / Bellevue Lincoln Mercury for over 40 years. We sold the dealership in 2001 and retained the property at 420 116th Northeast, which we rent to the Ford Motor Company. I was honored to serve on the Bellevue City Council, which had a solid list of accomplishments of which I would like to highlight. We rezoned the downtown. We stopped the Evergreen East project. You might remember the name DiBartolo. We saw the completion of I-90 that went from, instead of Boston to Bellevue, from Boston to Seattle. We rezoned an airport and turned it into an office park. We purchased the property for the downtown park, which I was the fourth and deciding vote. We did all this when the economy was in a dramatic recession and interest rates were 20%. Every council will have a legacy. The question is tonight is, what is yours? When you are in your mid-70s and you say to the Bellevue City Council, what will be your legacy? Will you say that you participated in cutting down 8,000 trees from Redmond to Renton, covering 18 miles, of which 9 miles run through the city of Bellevue? Will you say that you voted to place 83 to 130-foot transmission lines through our city? Would you really place 85 to 130-foot towers in your front yard? Over the years, Bellevue has come to be called the city in a park. Does placing industrial towers in our community live up to that theme? Everyone in our city wants to go home tonight, flip a switch, and turn on the lights. I am here tonight to remind you we want it to be done in a way that will give us all pride to live, work in the city we all love, Bellevue, a city in a park.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Okay, Steve O'Donnell. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor Balducci and Council. I'm Steve O'Donnell, the president of Sense. My wife, Julie, and I can't quite match Carolyn and Mike. We've only been here in Bellevue for 45 years. At the last council meeting, PSC President Andy Wappler presented the company's argument for building Energize Eastside Project. This evening, I would like to communicate our disappointment with PSC did not address any of the technical questions that Sense has raised repeatedly. As you know, we have questioned why it's reasonable to send large amounts of electricity to Canada during a power emergency on the east side, and we wondered why PSC would turn off most of its local generation during such an emergency. But PSC ignores these concerns and simply says this is the backbone of the east side that we haven't upgraded in 55 years. PSC conveys an impression that they haven't done much to maintain our electrical system since the last man walked on the moon. The truth is the company has installed a number of parallel transmission lines through Bellevue during the past 55 years, lines that run northwest from Mercer Slough. One goes through 116th, another one on 140th. With these additional lines in place, PSC has the capacity to serve its customers even if the so-called backbone lines are out of service. At the last meeting, a couple of business owners told the council that their companies and the economy, the vitality would be at risk if Energize Eastside was not built. Their concern about electrical reliability is understandable, but let's examine the facts. On page 47 of the report produced by Bellevue's independent analyst, the condition that PSC seeks to fix with Energize Eastside occurs only once every 3 to 30 years. During the decade, the next decade, Energize Eastside will prevent at most 3 outages totaling about 6 hours. And incidentally, none of the business outages would be corrected by spending $1 billion. Business owners, I see I'm out of time, so mm-hmm. I'll just wrap. Business owners don't want to pay higher electricity rates to finance a project that won't make a significant difference in reliability. Residents don't want a transmission line that degrades our neighborhoods, harms the environment, and increases the risk of devastating pipeline fires. There are reasonable alternatives that deliver better reliability to business and residents without all the negative consequences of Energize Eastside. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. O'Donnell.
And I really echo, thank you. Really echo Mike's comments about your legacy. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Steve Corley. Welcome.
Good evening. I'm Bellevue resident Steve Corley, residing at 3008 135th Avenue Northeast, commercial property manager and have officed in Bellevue for 18 years. I'm the past head coach of the Bellevue High Boys lacrosse team, currently coach Bellevue-based Cascade Striders Youth Running Club, and board member for the Sammamish Inner Lake Boys Lacrosse Club. On November 17th, a fall storm blew a neighbor's tree onto PSC's high-voltage transmission lines that run behind our houses. The tree burned spectacularly, and eventually the transmission line parted and fell. When the still energized line hit the ground, high voltage electricity found 2 pathways into my house. High voltage current was carried through our invisible fence wire around our yard and into our garage. The transformer for the system exploded in pieces across the garage. The garage circuit was damaged, as well as the electrical panel. High voltage also traveled through the ground and into the wiring of our irrigation system. That system was spectacularly damaged with lids blown off the control boxes around the yard, and the controller itself, again, blew across the garage. We feel we're extremely lucky that our house did not catch fire. We have scorch marks along the shingles where the fence wire was stapled, and acrid smoke hung in the garage in the air when my wife and children arrived home shortly thereafter. A neighbor of mine has testified to what happened when a down line arced into the Olympic Petroleum Pipeline and nearly bored a hole through the pipe. This same pipeline runs behind my house. The Energize Eastside plan is to increase the power carried by these lines by up to 4 times. I shudder to think what damage a downed line carrying that amount of power could do to nearby homes or to the pipeline. We worry that it might breach the pipeline in a similar situation. That would be a truly catastrophic event. Other options exist to the Energize Eastside project that are both less expensive and less dangerous for our community. I ask that you consider all the options and make the choice to protect our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Corley. Natalie Evans, welcome.
My name is Natalie Evans. I'm the director of the Bellevue Farmers Market, a nonprofit dedicated to serving local farms and supporting our community. I know many of you are familiar with our old director, Lori Taylor, who moved to Alabama to work with the law office down there. She did a lot for our market, and she'll be dreadfully missed, but our farmers market continues, as does the effort to promote a more socially just, economically viable, and environmentally sustainable food system in our region. I look forward to working with each of you as we work together in this effort. 2015 was not an easy season for our farmers. Mm-hmm. Between agonizing heat and droughts in the summer and excessive winds and flooding in the fall, this year's challenge was added to what is already a very challenging endeavor. We work within a fragile economy, and our job as a direct sales market, as set forth in the King County Local Food Initiative, is to support these vulnerable businesses in the good years and the bad. And we would not be able to do that without the council's support and the city's support. So thank you so much from the depths of our hearts. This year, the farmers market served 34 small family farms in 10 counties in Washington State, along with a number of processors and prepared food vendors, all local businesses that contribute greatly towards the health of our local economy. We had over 48,000 visitors and total sales amounting to about $855,000. And once again, our farmers were extremely generous and donated 6,700 pounds of fresh produce to Hope Link, valued at over $10,000. I'd like to thank our amazing sponsors, the City of Bellevue, Wells Medina Nursery, PACCAR, King County Councilmember Jane Haig, Overlake Hospital, Seattle Children's Hospital, Van and Jan Van Blaricum, Green Benefits, Befriend the Market, Bellevue Presbyterian Church, Sterling Realty Organization, Madison Marquette, Windermere Real Estate, and a number of generous anonymous sponsors. Looking forward to 2016. We have a lot of really great things planned. Great vendors, music, artists, and nonprofit vendor booths as usual. But we also have some other great things involved, and I see that I'm out of time. So just mark your calendars for May 12th, 2016. We hope to see you all there. Thank you for your support again, and happy holidays to each of you.
Well, Natalie, welcome. We're really delighted to have you. And of course, we love the farmers market, so we look forward to a long partnership with you as in stepping into Lori's shoes. Yeah. Congratulations. All right, Shabana Khan. Good evening. Good. Welcome.
So my name is Shabana Khan, and I reside at 4437 Southwest 101st Street. It's in Seattle. I'm just going to play this. It's 2 minutes long. Go ahead.
Yeah, go.
Here. Thank you for signing up here on the chatting on Skype. I hope you are enjoying the World Championship, one of the best tournaments on the tour, and hope to see you soon, guys.
My question is for Mohammed. Who do you think is the greatest player of all time? I'd love to know.
There are so many great players, but when it comes to mental toughness, I think Jahangir and Janshir and Jonah would always be the greatest.
French general, I've got a question for you. Could you please show me how you hold your racket during the game?
So that's the way I grip the racket, you know, on the back end. But then when I twist to forehand, you know, I move the racket a little bit, you know, in my hand, you know. Hey guys, I hope you enjoy the chat. See you soon on Skype.
take much more time because that was about 2 minutes, but I will give you some of the results we had from the event, and we've asked to do it again next year.
Excellent. Congratulations. Who won? The Frenchman. Excellent.
While she's doing that, I'd like to make a comment that, please, you know, we're looking at the council for something iconic, unique. This is indeed something very unique, something that the city, you know, is entering into that's got a world renowned reputation. I think this is a great thing to look at for our future, to engage in. So thank you for coming.
Yes, thank you. All right, and again, apologies for having to rush through it. Next we have Dr. Don Davidson, and guest.
Thank you. Don't start it.
Takes me a while to get here, you know. All right, I'm Don Davidson.
She can have 3 minutes, too. There's no age limit.
Oh, I get three?
Two minutes. Sorry, I'm sorry. She can have 2 minutes, too.
Anyhow, this is my granddaughter, Madison. And we're here to invite you to the Bellevue Youth Theater. She's going to give each one of you an invite. We're doing whatever you call that, the Nutcracker, Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker. It's a very unique one, though, because there's going to be singing. It's a musical, and there's going to be dialogue. You'll never see it anyplace in the world. And it's been set to the stage at the Bellevue Youth Theater. It's going to be this December 17th through the 20th, there's going to be 6 performances. I'm going to invite each and every one of you. You contact me, and I'll be able to make tickets available. And as a special treat, my granddaughter here, Madison, is going to dance for us.
Okay.
So we're going to get it all seriesed up here. She is going to dance the dance of the Harlequin dolls, the ones that come out of the box. You ready? Okay. Nothing makes a grandfather prouder than to see their granddaughter dance. By the way, I'm the grandfather in the play also.
Oh, my goodness.
So hope to see you all there. Pick your date and get a hold of me, and I'll get you tickets.
Well, that was tremendous. Thank you so much, Madison. Thank you, Dr. D. Well, that you couldn't have a better advertisement than that. Go see the Nutcracker at BYT. All right. Next, Mr. Robert Killian. Good evening and welcome.
I feel at an extreme disadvantage when I'm on a Skype show and I didn't bring a dancer. My name is Robert Killian. I've spoken to you several times before regarding downtown livability. I'm a resident of Bellevue for 59 years. What I'd like to talk about are three specific subjects involving various aspects of downtown livability. One is amenities gone astray. I recently attended a fauna project, I think called Project 4 also, Northeast 4th Street and 106 on the southeast corner of that area, in which they talked about amenities and incentives and having raised the building height on the basis of having a swimming pool in their design. When asked, well, is that swimming pool for the public? The answer was no, it's for the hotel clientele. Now, that, and I have not verified that. That is the answer that was given specifically. If that is the case, that's amenities gone astray. There should be no incentive to build something that's going to help your clientele but not help the public. Okay, topic number two. In the meeting tonight, I heard a number of discussions on iconic buildings. And I've seen numerous uses of a photograph taken from downtown Bellevue Park, Bellevue Downtown Park, looking roughly north, northeast, and showing the skyline of Bellevue and highlighting on that the two Bellevue Towers. In fact, I even saw that on a few election brochures in a recent election. And how ironic it is that we have an iconic view that's been in magazines nationally as well as local and in our election brochures, and we're about to see that iconic view disappear with the office building 425 and the Lincoln Square expansion. Sometimes we step on our own air hose. The third subject is involving amenities in general. Are they necessary? Bellevue in itself is highly desirable for builders. Why do we have to provide them with incentives to come in and do their projects? We can build those requirements into our code and require them to put them in without giving them incentivization to come into our town. It's highly desirable already. Thank you,
Mr. Killian. Okay, Heather Truscas. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Heather Truscas. I'm the Executive Director of Eastside Heritage Center, and I'm joined this evening by a couple of board members, Board President Bettina Finley and Board Treasurer Ross McIver. We are here, Eastside Heritage Center, to support the $150,000 allocation in the capital budget for the relocation and preservation of the Burroughs Cabin in a Bellevue Park. As noted in the staff memo, the cabin was built in 1883 by Albert Burroughs, and it is the oldest known structure in Bellevue. The cabin is representative of the simple log homes that were built by the early settlers in the Northwest. In the 1930s, the cabin moved from its original location on Lake Washington to the south west corner of Bellevue Way and Northeast 8th, approximately where the Crate and Barrel is. And then in 1946, when Bellevue Square was being built, it moved to its current location, 112th. So who was the Burroughs family? Albert Burroughs was one of Bellevue's first permanent settlers. He arrived in the area with his four children in 1882, and as a Civil War veteran, he was eligible to claim 160 acres of land for homesteading. And he chose a spot on the east side of Lake Washington in what is now Killarney, approximately Enatai area. There, he built a log cabin. In the spring of 1884, Albert Burroughs donated land for Bellevue's first school in the current general area of Chesterfield Park, and he helped to build that one-room schoolhouse. His daughter, Calanthea Burroughs, was Bellevue's first school teacher. In 1894, Albert Burroughs became a state legislator in the Washington State Legislature. He died a short time thereafter. His son, Albert S. Burroughs, was a member of the University of Washington's first graduating class, and in 1905, he became King County Superintendent of Schools. Further down the family line, one of Albert's grandsons, Rhody Burroughs, was a noted local historian and formerly the property owner of where the cabin currently sits. And another grandson, Donald Burroughs, married Mita Jacobson Burroughs, a prominent Bellevue businesswoman who owned the Lakeside Drugstore with the famous soda fountain and helped to found the Bellevue Chamber of Commerce. So thank you for considering this request to allocate funding for parks to preserve such a significant piece of Bellevue history. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather. Mr. Ty Thorpe. Welcome.
Good evening. Good evening. I'm Ty Thorpe at 5060 Highland Drive in Bellevue, and I'm currently the owner of the Burroughs Cabin. So Heather gave a good overview of the history of it, so I'd like to add a little bit of color as the owner. I'm a lifelong resident of Bellevue, 61 years. The cabin, I'm proud to say that Rhody Burroughs was a close family friend. He sold my father the land next to the cabin where I grew up. And in 1965, he sold the land and the cabin to my father, and I've now inherited it. So the cabin has been part of my life for the 61 years and part of the family for the past 50. Currently, it's a rental. We've had it as a rental for a number of years. We've had quite a few tenants that have been in the cabin. I think I'm safe to say they've all been very happy to live there. when they do move in, we give them a picture of the cabin from its previous days, same one that's in the book, Bellevue's First 100 Years. We cover some of the points of the cabin that are in the book, as well as some of the notes that Rhodey has put on the back of the picture here. The tenants have told me over the years that there have been people that have shown up and knocked on the door and asked to, you know, asked about the cabin, the history of it. Some have even asked to come inside and look around, you know, which is a little unnerving, but they've done that. There have been quite a few folks. There's been a number of people who have shown up on the front porch just to have their picture taken. One tenant was telling me one time they were home and they heard some noise outside and they looked out the window. There was a bridal party out there with the bride and groom up on the front steps getting their picture taken. Again, Rhodey was a close family friend. He was, as Heather mentioned, a wealth of knowledge in the history of Bellevue. One time he went up to the Crossroads Mall to participate in some Heritage Days up there. I was helping him out, and as I was standing there watching him, there was a group of little girls and boys that came up, and Rhodey had all of his tools, and he was getting ready to show them with the fro and the mallet on how to split a shake. And one of the little girls was saying, hey, you guys, be quiet. You know, we're listening to a real pioneer. So it was good. So quickly in conclusion, I'd like to say that Rhodey, many members of the folks in the book and the structures are now only memories, words, and pictures. We have an opportunity to preserve the cabin, have it more than just a memory. And as I may see in the notes, I pledged some funds and help support the preservation, as well as donation of the cabin. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Thorpe, and thank you for working to preserve this. And I hope that we will partner with you in that. That's for later in the agenda. Tonight, we're back on communications. So, Ms. Betsy Hummer. I should say Councilmember Betsy Hummer. Welcome.
Thank you. Maribel Ducci, council members. I am Betsy Hummer, 14541 Southeast 26th Street. It's Sunset Ranch. It's also known as Bellevue College. I was elected to the East Bellevue Community Council in 2014, but I am here as a private citizen. I want to thank you each very much for supporting East Bellevue Community Council's appeal to Superior Court regarding the court's decision to deny jurisdiction over shoreline matters. Since the Community Council's inception in 1969, we have always addressed shoreline concerns. Larson Lake and Kelsey Creek are in the center of our district. Those two bodies of water comprise the heart of Bellevue's storm drainage system as Kelsey Creek meanders through 30 miles of our fair city. Council members have worked through the years to protect the shoreline, drainage system, and salmon habitat. First, one of our initial steps was to declare Larson Lake open use as opposed to commercial and high-density housing that the county had zoned. In addition, the first decade was spent working closely with city staff, commissions, and boards, as well as the city council, to ensure the iconic Lake Hills Greenbelt was established. It serves as the anchor for Bellevue as a city and a park. When you look across Lake Washington from the Space Needle, you see the shimmering high-rises above a sea of green, most of which comes from our iconic boulevards, rights-of-ways, preserved open spaces, and myriad of parks. Since the early 70s, East Bellevue Community Council has also been instrumental in developing the Shoreline Management Program with first the Department of Public Works and then the Utilities Department. This included input on gravel pits in the Richards Valley area since it has a direct impact on the East Bellevue drainage system. With various outside entities moving into Bellevue and having rights over Bellevue's resources, I feel it is of utmost necessity to continue the City of Bellevue's history of recognizing East Bellevue Community Council's jurisdiction over land use decisions.
I don't know if you can see it, but that red thing's blinking.
Oh, regardless of how soggy the land happens to be. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks again for your discussion.
Sorry for stepping on your finale there. It was a good one. Okay. Mr. Bill Herman. Good evening and welcome.
Hi. I'm Bill Herman. I'm from Bellevue Towers. At the workshop, our consultant advised that before stating our goals, our goals as a prerequisite to discussing the incentive system, So increasing livability is not a specific enough goal to guide anyone to creating an incentive system. I just was looking for council to determine goals, and just an example would be, enhancing our reputation as a city and a park, and then they could look at different incentives and say, does that achieve that goal? But almost anything could be argued to increase livability. Mobility is at the heart of our incentive system. The incentive system trades amenities for increased FAR. And so when you increase FAR, you decrease mobility. So council needs to set a direction about mobility standards and targets. The 67% proposed increase in FAR allowed in the MU district has unknown impact, and it's really hard to even set a price for trading that away. Whether the developers earn this additional FAR through incentives or whether this is just a gift to developers needs to be determined by council, not be left to the PDC. And there's a lot of policy decisions that need to be made before handing off the incentive system process. It may be even make sense to require that trading away FAR is a discretionary item and that you must meet mobility targets before you have the budget to spend away the FAR. So there's a lot of different ideas we could try, but I don't think we're quite ready.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Herman. All right, that brings us to the end of our sign-up sheet, and unfortunately we're over time, so I'm not going to be able to call for more comments until the end of the agenda when we'll have continued oral communications. And for now, we will move on to reports of community council boards and commissions. Seeing none, report of the city manager, Mr. Miyake.
No report tonight.
Okay. Any council business or new initiatives? All right, we're going to move right along. Consent agenda.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Any comments or questions? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The consent agenda carries. There's no land use, so that brings us to other ordinances, resolutions, and motions. And the first is Ordinance 6263, updating development services. Oh, this is the whole package, isn't it? Okay. So let's...
We have a public hearing this evening.
Oh, sorry, I skipped right over it. Thank you. Public hearing.
Public hearing.
Item 9.
And action relinquishing portion of the public utility easements across two parcels at 1005 and 1015 104th Avenue Southeast. And then joining us this evening for a brief staff report is Max Jacobs, our real property manager, and Andrew Lee, the utilities deputy director.
Hello, Mayor Balducci, Deputy Mayor Wallace, and council members. I'm here today to talk about a proposed utility easement relinquishment, and this will be followed by a public hearing. So first I'd like to point out the subject area for the easement relinquishment, and it's actually a partial relinquishment. The subject area that you can see here is just south of downtown, and it's highlighted in the red area, the red box that runs north-south. It is near the addresses of 1005 and 1015 104th Avenue Southeast. The history of this subject area is that the city actually acquired it as a right-of-way was dedicated to the public at no cost in 1890. However, portions of this right-of-way were never opened. In 1976, a portion of that unopened right-of-way was vacated by the city to the adjacent property owners, also at no compensation. However, as part of that vacation, utility reserved an easement approximately 60 feet wide over the former right-of-way area, and that was to accommodate water, sewer, storm drainage, as well as electrical utilities. However, the easterly 25-foot portion of the 60-foot easement can be relinquished because the city's existing facilities only require 35 feet of the total easement width, all of which lies on the west side of that 60-foot wide easement. In 2014, a property owner submitted a short plat application. That process is now complete, and the owner requested that the easement be partially relinquished to allow construction of homes to fully develop the potential lots. The Utilities Department has confirmed that the full width of the easement is no longer needed, and last month in November, Council determined easement surplus in part. So zooming into the subject property, you can see here from this map on the left-hand side. It is a 60-foot-wide easement from west to east. Half of that easement lies on the properties to the west. Half of them lies on the properties to the east. The subject properties that are looking for the easement to be partially relinquished are in the northeast corner right here. And what we are proposing, this is a blow-up of those two properties there, is to vacate 25 feet of the easement and retain 5 feet of the easement that is on the near, right next to the property lines. That area would still be used for a storm drainage line, which runs north-south along this area. So at this point, I'll pause and see if you have any questions, either myself or Max Jacobs is happy to answer them before we move to the public hearing.
Okay. Why don't we do the public hearing first, and then we'll have whatever discussion needs to be had after. So I would ask for a motion to open the public hearing.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. I'm just going to do this one. If you don't object, just roll through it real quick. So we have a sign-up sheet with one name on it, and it is Todd Levitt. Would you please come down, give your name and address, and you will have 3 minutes to say your piece. Thank you so much. Good evening.
Good evening, Mayor. Good evening, Council members. My name is Todd Levitt. I am with Due North Investments, who owns the property. I'm a representative of Due North Investments. My address, 14410 Bell Red Road. Thank you for taking this matter into consideration this evening. I'll be very brief in my comments. We have been working with staff on this relinquishment for at least 15, 16 months. It was about the point where we started our preliminary plat application under the premise that this eventually would go away because staff at that point felt it was not needed. As you heard in the presentation, the original vacation of that area happened in 1976. Here we sit 40 years later, almost 40 years later, and obviously nothing has happened with that area. So obviously staff has concluded with a lot of research and time into it that there is no value here for the city of Bellevue, and we really would appreciate working with us and approving the relinquishment, a partial relinquishment easement within this area. Thank you. I'm here for any questions if needed.
Okay, thank you very much. Those the only person signed up to speak. Is there anybody else who would like to speak in the public hearing? Going once, going twice, seeing none. Would there be a motion to close the public hearing, please?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Public hearing is closed. And so we'll move into discussion. And I believe Councilmember Robertson had some thoughts on this one. So why don't you go ahead?
I think a lot more information is needed before I'm ready to take action on this. In looking at this, I have some questions, so I'll just lay them out and see what we can find. So one of the things that I questioned was what the fair market value is of this strip of land. I know we have not done an appraisal, but do we have a fair market value of the land as far as an estimate?
Well, Councilmember Robertson, good evening. We have just a very rough estimate that we did just for the sake of this discussion, and depending on how an appraiser were to look at the value of the easement, and that's usually going to be a percentage of the underlying fee, if it was in the range of 10%, which might be reasonable, could be about $16,000. It could be up to $40,000 if there was a higher percentage or a higher dollar amount on the fee value.
Okay. So as I was looking at this, just some background for my colleagues, you guys all know that I am an attorney that represents cities, and I recently did a chapter for one of my cities on street vacations. And so that got me thinking when I saw this agenda item come forward. And so for the public, this piece of property was acquired by the city as dedicated right-of-way in the 1890s. Then that was never improved, and it was vacated, and an easement reserved for utility purposes in 1976. So the statutes that are on point on with regard to street vacation and utility vacation both anticipate that there could or should, in some cases, shall be compensation paid for vacating it. Under the street vacation, it's half of the appraised value unless it's been held by more than 25 years, then the city can require. And I think our ordinance does require 100% of the fair market appraised value. Under the public utilities, if it is acquired for public utilities, and I have a question about that, I think we need more history. The city has to make a finding of public benefit, and we have broad legislative discretion on what to require for compensation for a vacated easement. And had this particular property owner given us an easement at no cost to them, I would certainly feel it's the right thing to vacate it at no compensation back, but that was not the case. This property was acquired, the city's interest, in the 1890s. So my question for the city staff then is whether what procedures we should be using, what is the history? And I think what we need to do is we need to look at not just the 1890s plat, but I think we need to look at how the right-of-way was vacated in 1976 and exactly how the city retained the interest so that we can understand exactly which state statute applies to this so that, one, we do the proper procedure, which in either case requires a public hearing, but, two, we have the proper vacation or relinquishment legislation, and, three, we make sure that the people of the city who pay utility rates and who the utility owns this property are duly compensated. So fair market value is one issue, but what the legal requirements are is very unclear to me. And as soon as I read the packet, I did talk with our legal counsel, and it seems like it's a little unclear to the city. So I would certainly advocate having more clarity on the process before we take legislative action. I also think that the resolution as written doesn't even meet the minimum standards in the RCW with regard to utility vacation, which for the three other lawyers on the call on the council is 3594040. Street vacation is 3579030 is the compensation. I have those questions. I also would like to make sure that just like with street vacation, whatever process the city is undertaking for this, that the cost of our process is being recouped from the property owner who will receive the relinquishment back. So do you know, can you speak to how much the cost of this procedure is and how much the fee, which may have or may not have been paid by the applicant, is covering that cost? There's my last question and then my plea for my colleagues that we wait for these answers. And any of the things I've just said, please feel free to speak to and answer if you have those at your fingertips, sir.
Just a few of those items, Council Member.
Sure.
As far as process, it's been the city's practice to relinquish easements for no compensation, and you raise very good questions because our street vacation process, as you noted, is quite detailed and very specific. There's an application fee and appraisal process, and it's all very clearly spelled out. There's no such process for our easement relinquishments, and that's one of the reasons we've actually been drafting some process now at staff level in order to make that a little more clear and documented. But it's been our practice to relinquish easements for no compensation, and this easement in particular seemed to be appropriate for that practice because the city acquired it through a dedication in 1890, and because of a kind of a unique law during that short period of time in the 1890s was essentially required to vacate it in 1976 for no compensation. So essentially by retaining the easement in 1976, the city acquired that easement at no cost. And that was consistent with the way we've dealt with a lot of other easement relinquishments, again, as our normal practice. Regarding staff time, again, that's something that we're addressing it's part of our work plan to put together a more detailed procedure so that it's all really spelled out. And so staff costs would be accommodated with some kind of a filing fee. We do not have a filing fee currently. These are not a huge workload. They're relatively straightforward. We just have to primarily confirm that the easement's no longer needed and then present the materials to the council for consideration.
Okay. I'd like to have more legal analysis because I don't know the plat. I haven't seen the plat or seen what it said. But the street vacation, the first street vacation requirements, and I haven't tracked back all the changes over the 110 years, but the first street vacation requirements came into effect in 1897, so I don't know how that would have conflicted with the plat, but certainly the 1976. I think that the other thing is that we may have had an unwritten practice to vacate these at no cost, but that is not really the staff's call to make. According to the state statute, it is very clearly the legislative discretion to set up to fair market value the cost or the cost recovery for these type of properties. And so I think that we need to make sure that we understand what happened and be given the information so that we can make that decision as a legislative body. And also, I absolutely wholeheartedly support having a more clear and specific process for this as well as for street vacations so that we do recover our costs and we do comply with the state law. Thanks.
Anyone else? So there's Councilmember Chelmanek.
So all very good questions. I'm trying to remember. We had a situation in the Locklevin neighborhood, and I thought it was an easement that it was between two properties, and we did require compensation. I may be wrong on that. It was property that was owned by Kathy, I'm drawing a blank on her last name, it began with a G.
Gillian,
yes. Is there a, maybe I'm just, maybe it was a different process. But I believe we required, and maybe it wasn't an easement, but I believe we did require payment of the relinquishment. Maybe it was a vacation and not an easement. But this would have been 3 years ago, I'm thinking.
You mean that historic one that we fixed? That was a long time ago. I think it was before several of us were on the council. It was just you and me and Conrad.
Well, okay.
I believe, Nora Johnson here, that was Kathy Gwillem.
Yes.
And I believe that we found a pre-existing ordinance that had actually been vacated and not ever actually finalized. So we were able to act based on that, and she did not have to pay compensation based on a historic ordinance that we found.
So we will bring back more information on this and any other circumstances that are relevant, other past examples, if that'd be helpful.
So I don't know what the feeling of the body is, but Councilmember Robertson is raising some good questions about our process and our current rules and regulations that definitely merit a good hard look. I question a little bit, and maybe you all could muse out loud a bit on this one, although I understand it will be difficult, whether it makes sense to think about changing our policies and procedures in midstream on a process that people have been working on for quite some time. It's somewhat similar to the discussion we had about grandfathering and the transportation impact fees that were going up. I wonder if it would make some sense to process the one in front of us based on our existing procedures and rules, and then address whatever flaws may exist in those going forward. I just would like to know what people think about that. Deputy Mayor.
I support that.
Okay. Councilmember Lee.
When I heard Councilmember Robertson said she has some question about the legal situation, which I have no idea. So that's, I would stay mute on that, defer to Councilmember's legal expertise. In terms of changing the middle of the stream, I agree with you that, we could wait. But I believe the legal interpretation has to take precedence. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Stokes.
Well, I agree with that, what you stated. I understand that there are no, I don't think it's quite accurate to say there are no policies or procedures in place, because we're doing something that has been done somewhat before, and we're doing this now. So we put it in place. And we've had a hearing based on that, and we knew this was coming, council knew it was coming up. I guess I'm not bothered by the substantive part of this. I think under the circumstances, it's okay. It's a small piece. We still have an easement, a utility easement in it. I would like to understand what, if there is a legal flaw in the resolution as stated, let's get that squared away and bring it back, and we can think about it a little more until next week. But and I also agree that if we don't have a process in place that's formalized, then we need to do so. And it may end up being the same thing, but at least it's on record and people know what to expect. Mm-hmm. But I think there is a certain reliance on the process that we have now that's been brought forward, and I do have a little problem with changing horses in the middle of the stream, so unless it's absolutely illegal. So I appreciate you bringing it back, but I've said what I need to say. Thank you.
Councilmember Robertson.
So from my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong to the staff, we don't have a procedure, local procedure in place for processing or standards for approving reconveyances of utility property, do we? I was told today on the phone that we do not. That's a question.
Well, reconveyance, we do not have a process on easement relinquishments.
Right, that's what I meant.
That's right.
Okay, so we don't have
a practice we followed.
Right, and I've been on the council 6 years. I don't think I've seen one of these, or you would have gotten these questions then.
We did have one last year.
Okay, I must not have. Maybe I was gone that day. So if it got past me, I apologize. But the state law on this, and I'm going to read it because it's only like three sentences, is that whenever a city shall determine by resolution of its legislative authority that any lands, property, or equipment originally acquired for public utility purposes is surplus to the city's needs and is not required for providing continued public utility service, then such legislative authority by resolution and after a public hearing may cause such lands, property, or equipment to be leased, sold, or conveyed. That's why I said use the word conveyance. Such resolution shall state the fair market value, or the rent or consideration to be paid. Our resolution doesn't state that. And such terms and conditions for such disposition as the legislative authority deems to be in the best public interest. Our resolution is silent on that. And then it says that the provisions of this other process don't apply. So that's a different process for conveying a big chunk of a utility. So our resolution is defective, in my opinion, because it doesn't meet this very clear, very small state statute. Which is under the chapter sale or lease of municipal utilities. So that's a problem. But I also, it makes it pretty clear to me that we have broad discretion here. We don't have any policies and procedures in place. I'd like more information so that the council can at least understand the breadth of ideas of what we might want to do with our discretion, and then we can exercise it. But to have it just be assumed that we are going to exercise the discretion in a certain way and have it just jammed through without the full information, to me, it's weak staff work. I apologize. Happy holidays anyway. It's weak staff work, and it's not consistent to allow us to exercise our discretion. We need to have this information. I recommend that we get that information and have it come back in early January.
Councilmember Stokes.
Yeah, I appreciate Councilmember Robertson's viewpoint on this. That's why I asked what the legal basis of this is, and I agree with that, and I think we should go forward with
talking without the mic on. I don't think it's necessary to get into the staffing issue on this. That's something we should take up outside of this. But I certainly agree we need to look into it. Nobody's trying to ram it through. We were requested to do this. And it's up to us to decide whether we want to do it, and we don't want to do it tonight, and bring it back to us next week, and hope we can get it resolved and move forward.
So are we prepared to wait as requested, or does somebody want to move it forward?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. We will look for answers to the questions and see this back again at the earliest possible date, please. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, now we move to other ordinances, resolutions, and motions. As 11A through E, are those all related to the
yes,
budget?
Yes, they are. They're related to
okay,
the
okay, so this is file. Where we move to the discussion of the open budget items.
Right. And so, as you mentioned, there are a number of budget open budget items, Mayor, relating to one on the operating budget and multiple ones on the capital budget, and as well as some proposed options on the CIP budget related to EastLink. What we thought would make some sense is, as you mentioned, go through each one of those first. We included in your packages some motion language available to each one of the council members who are making the proposals to bring those forward to the council for a decision tonight.
So nothing to all right, I'm going to have to.
Discussed 6263 through study sessions, which is the development services fees.
So,
do you
correct.
Want a motion to put that before us? Then have any questions?
I would actually like to resolve all of the outstanding
right.
questions that we have not resolved for the operating
gotcha.
And CIP, and then move through the five ordinances, hopefully expeditiously one after another, if that works. So, okay. So since there's no handy guide, I'm gonna do this myself. The first question, as I understand it, was an operating budget question. It was a proposal by Councilmember Lee to set aside approximately $150,000 to do a feasibility study of a cultural arts center. Councilmember Lee, would you like to put that in front of us?
Thank you. I move to approve Ordinance 6265, adopting the modification of the 2015 to 2016 biennium budget and 2015-2021 capital investment program plan, as modified by any amendments, setting forth the estimated revenues and appropriation, establishing job classification and pay ranges, and the selection of the effective date. This may be too much. I just read for the whole thing. So that's the preamble for the top. But I guess that applies to everything. So I already said for everyone. So you can skip it all. You guys can skip it.
Okay.
I move to adjust the general fund budget to fund an additional $150,000 to fund a multicultural feasibility study. Multicultural facility feasibility study.
Okay.
$150,000 to fund multicultural facility feasibility study, offset by drawing down general fund reserves.
Okay, just pause there. Is there a second? I'm not hearing a second to that motion, Councilmember Lee.
I'd like to speak to it.
Maybe Councilmember Lee would like to speak to it first, and then you can,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll second the motion then to put it on.
Okay, it's been seconded for purposes of discussion. Councilmember Lee, would you like to speak to the motion briefly?
So we have heard over and over, and we pretend ourselves to be very interested in diversity and multicultural, and that's what our population is. We're 40% ethnic minority, 30% Asian Americans, one-third of the population foreign-born. And we've heard over and over people have no facility for cultural events, and they are stuck between a hard rock and a hard place when they look for spaces. You know, it's just not enough. And the cost and availability, and we know Bellevue is very tight for space anyway. We face a dilemma all over the place. So it's just an attempt to have the staff and the city take a look at what, you know, are available. What can we do? Whether it be the city funding or whether it be public, private, partnership or whatnot. You know, I think we need to make an effort to give the staff some direction and some guidance. You know, they are doing a great job. We have a great program. You know, we have just gone through all the accolades of what Bellevue's done, you know, in our multicultural and diversity programs. So I don't need to go through all the details. So I believe that this is a good direction and good guidance and show leadership to the staff to pay some attention and do something that's important, that it's sorely needed. There are a lot of activities going on. We always appreciate them when we're invited to participate, you know, by the public, by private sector, not by the government. But, you know, we lend our support by doing that. And we can give them lots of money, you know, but no space, they go somewhere else. And so we need to make a real effort, and this is the intent, to provide some money. And I want to be sure that if you guys, the council, don't think that, you know, they will want to provide money, I hope you give the right signal to the staff, to the public, to the community, that we are real. However, you know, it's money speaks, okay? Follow the money. So my proposal is to provide some real incentive and have the direction for the city staff to provide a very needed service and important facility. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Robinson, followed by Councilmember Robertson.
Councilmember Lee, thank you for bringing this up. This is in our council vision. I do think it's very important for our city. I don't want to just vote it in tonight, but I do want to ask that the staff come back and that we look at this strongly next year and look at how we could put this in the budget next year. So whether we wait until next year to do that or we do it sooner than that with a plan for next year. But I'm very interested in moving forward on this, but just not with a financial move tonight.
And if I may presume just a moment to expand upon what you said, I think the reasoning behind that is probably that this is a mid-biennium update and next year is a full budget process. And at that point, you have to obviously weigh all the different priorities, including all the priorities in the cultural compass and the council priorities. Councilmember Robinson.
I absolutely agree with my colleague, Councilmember Robinson. And I do think that we have some funding in the budget, which will be used in part to consider a multicultural center at Ashwood Park. The Ashwood Park Master Plan is going to be launching in the first or second quarter of next year. It's already funded. And one of the potential uses for that property is to add another community center, one of which has long been visioned as a multicultural center. So whether that is the right place or the right project, that's something that the Parks Board and ultimately this body will grapple with when that master planning is redone. But I'd like to see that process, since it's ahead of anything that we would launch tonight, just with putting money in the budget. But it's a lot that process play out. And also then, as that process plays out, if it isn't ultimately the place that is recommended and accepted as a multicultural center, we definitely should be looking at it in the range of the full park plan. I don't know when the master parks plan for the whole city is updated, but we should certainly put some money in at that time to look at where the right location might be for a multicultural center, because I think it's a really excellent idea, Councilmember Lee, and I really will support looking at it, finding the right place, finding the right fit at that time when we're in that process. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Stokes.
Yeah, I agree with the comments that have been made, and I think we should move forward on this in the coming budget year. And I think Councilmember Robertson actually introduced an element that makes me think even more we shouldn't do anything about today, because I have some real concerns about even hinting that we're going to take Ashwood Park and make it something less than a park. So, you know, there's some things we need to talk about. It's a serious issue. Yeah. So, well,
it's been discussed.
It's been discussed, and yeah, we've
I don't know that it's gonna
come. I thought we had said pretty clearly we have an open space downtown, we need to keep it that way, basically. So, but that's a discussion we need to have. So that's an illustration why we need to put it as part of the budget and look at it, but absolutely we need to do this. So very supportive of it, just not at this last minute in this process. Thank you.
Okay. I think we've had discussion. I'm gonna call for a vote on the motion by Councilmember Lee. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
I want to just close by saying I appreciate very much your sentiment. I apologize for making my point.
No need to apologize, Councilmember.
No, just want to get point. You know, I hope I live to see that. I see. No, I'm the longest council member on the council, so I'm showing my impatience. I hope you understand that. I think that's always good for the order if we show some, you know, impatience and tolerance, which I showed impatience, you show tolerance. So okay. We made it work. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Lee. Okay. So here's where I show my impatience. We're moving on to the next item. It is in the capital investment program. We have a number of items. The first is a proposal from Councilmember Robertson regarding Northeast First Street on-street parking. Are you prepared to move that and speak to it, Councilmember?
I am. I'm just trying to. I'm looking at the draft budget. There's six options listed, but there's only two budgets. Let me just make sure that I'm going to make the right motion. Okay, I move to adjust the scope of the downtown park capital improvement project to include increased Northeast First parking capacity, with the scope to include impacts to the community and public outreach, and a further developed budget proposal to be developed as part of the 2017-2023 CIP budget discussions next year, 2016.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, so moved and seconded.
And I'd like to speak.
Please, go ahead.
So, as you know, that we've been looking at the old main area and the downtown park and the parking issues, and they're all interwoven. And I had worked with staff to come up with an idea to potentially put parking on Northeast First, since we're closing the parking lot as part of Close the Circle. It hasn't really been baked yet, the idea, as far as it hasn't been shopped, gone to public outreach. And so when we were discussing this last time, Deputy Mayor Wallace suggested that we put it into the process for looking at the downtown park. I think that was a really excellent idea, because as outreach and things are going on with that, this can be further developed and looked at more closely. And then next year, if the council thinks it's a good idea to do it, and what exactly it is will be further refined, then we can adjust the downtown park budget or a different line item in the budget to fund it, should we decide that it is worthy of funding. So I think that it's really appropriate that it move forward with that, and I hope that you will support this motion.
Okay. Councilmember Chelmanac, followed by Councilmember Stokes and Councilmember Robinson.
Well, first of all, I want to support it, but I would really like to ask if you would consider a slight amendment to the motion. Your motion says to include increased parking, but your colloquy said that you want to study how it would happen. So I would ask that the motion be that the Downtown Park Capital Improvement Project to consider inclusion of increased parking on Northeast First. It almost seems as if the way the motion was stated, that it's already a fait accompli that we will include parking on Northeast First.
I think that's the intention. I didn't write the motion, but
correct.
The option five that's in the packet, which says that the Northeast First parking would be included, would we be asking transportation and parks to complete further design, including impacts to the community and public outreach, with further developed proposal within the next budget year. That's kind of what I intend. They're going to do more work on it. They're going to do some outreach, and then they'll come back to us next year.
Okay, so it is the project to consider inclusion of increased.
Yes, that's fine with me.
Okay, then I can support that.
Okay. Councilmember Stokes?
Yeah, absolutely. I can support that also. I thought it was a good idea when it was first raised until we kind of got into it, and I'm very concerned about the parking in that area as a whole, and I do want to make sure we're not just doing something piecemeal and that it's part of a larger plan, but I think the way it's been resolved is a good way to go on this, and I support it, but I do hope that we really seriously work on parking, not only around this area but downtown, that whole parking piece, and this is just a part of it. So this may be a good step to actually incentivize us to really get to work on this, which I know a lot of work's being done, but we can do better.
Councilmember Robinson?
I'm willing to look at this, but I want some assurances from staff that in doing that, as the motion's been worded, that it's not going to delay the completion of the downtown park in any way, and that we're going to take into consideration the visual impact that this is going to have on the residents who reside on First Street and overlook the park, because there's a big power line that is currently being hidden by those trees. And I know that that's going to be an issue, because I understand, well, maybe the staff could speak to if it's possible if we were to do a project like that, if it would be possible to underground that line at the same time. And I also would like you to speak to what the impact would be on the park itself because, you know, the park is not just for the people inside the park. The park is for the people who drive by the park and look at the park. So I'd like those considerations before I decide whether or not to vote.
Whether or not to vote on...
The motion.
The motion.
Or to vote for the motion, I should say.
Let me... Can I just suggest something here, though? I think, as I heard the colloquy between Councilmembers Chelmanac and Robertson, that this is asking staff to explore the possibility and to come back with a proposal for funding, if at all, in the next budget. And at that point, there will be a decision point. Am I hearing that correctly?
That's correct. And it would be looked at as part of, I mean, it won't be looked at just as the parking on Northeast First. It'll be looked at in conjunction with the overall redevelopment of the park. Not to slow down the park. That is not my intention at all. Okay. So please tell me if it would.
And so I would think, and if I'm off base here, just carry on. But if I would think that that would be the time when questions of whether the community wants this, whether it makes sense, whether it visually is too impactful, whatever questions.
We could do that at that time, but I would like to know tonight if it would, and you would too, if it would slow down the completion of the park to... if we were to vote for this project.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that the Close the Circle project right now, the timeline is if we prevail in the SEPA appeal, that we would be prepared to be under construction in July of 16. The playground project may either be combined with that or follow within 2 or 3 months. We have to figure out, this would be a third component and would have to go through the public process and the permitting process. I'm really not sure that all of that would be feasible to be done by the time we have to go out to bid, which is probably in April. But that said, it breaks down into three segments of now a larger project, the Close the Circle, the playground project, and then this segment. It would likely be sequenced anyway. So the real question is, when would we sequence this in? Would it be part of the Close the Circle project, and I'm saying it would be difficult to meet that timeline. Would it be part of the playground project, which will come probably a couple months after we start the Circle project? So that gives a little more time. Or could it simply come as a third project that comes at the tail end of both of those, but it's all part of one project? In other words, it's phased. So that would be the way that we would look at this. It would be more sequencing whether it fits at the tail end of the project or whether it fits in the middle of the project. We have to really look at that based on a number of factors. And we'd have to get with transportation and sort of understand how all this would shake out.
Could it...
Does that...
Would it, not really. Would it be possible for us to say we want you to look at this, but not at the expense of the timeline? I don't see why you couldn't be looking at this while the appeal is pending, for example. There's time there in the schedule right now.
Sure, we would be looking at it.
Yeah.
We are looking at it.
And then make, you know, sort of just as a matter of directive, not as part of the motion, but make sure that if at any point this is going to cause a problem with the timing of the park, you come back to the council and seek further direction, because what you're hearing is nobody wants to delay the park.
Correct.
Yeah?
Yeah, I just think we say unequivocally right now, the policy is we will not delay the completion of the circle. And if that means this comes later, then it comes later.
Okay. A couple people were waiting. Councilmember Lee.
Thank you. This is what caused me concern. We all want to have the park completed without any delay. And I think the staff realized that. And this parking thing is also important, obviously. We wanted to see that happen. But, you know, I hear the problem, the concern that, I don't know how to address it. Without getting the staff the wrong signal, You know, to me, it's no different than what I proposed earlier. You know, I mean, I hope the staff will move forward with the Inumashu, you know, culture facility, or they may just leave it there for the next how many years until Ashwood Park gets looked at. I have no idea. So it's really a matter of timing, facing. These are all concerns. I think that's our direction, our signal to the staff. Not even signal. This is our direction. I hope the city manager, I hope the staff hears us clearly, and I hope we, the council, through our actions, ordinances, and say, this is what we want, and give us a timeline. You know, but we don't seem to do that consistently. So, you know, I the best thing we can do is speak as much as we can, articulate as clearly as we can, and hope the staff, the city manager, get a sense and check in with us. And if you don't, I guess we got to go after you. You know, and that's, to me, it's not a very efficient way of doing things. But this is where we are. So I have no problem agreeing with what we need to do, but I'm not sure how we can do it with or without, you know, this kind of direction. You know, if we give it, what's the staff going to respond to? I'm not sure. So I'm going to wait and think through and see what I have to do. Okay. Thank you.
All right, so I think we've had discussion. Are people ready to move this one to a vote? Okay. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? It carries unanimously. This brings us to item number, well, it's number CIP number two, the Burroughs Cabin proposal, and I'm going to call on Council Member Robinson.
Do I make the motion?
Are you prepared? Yes. Please, if you would just go ahead and make the motion, and then as if there's a second, we'll speak to it.
Okay. I'd like to move to establish a new project in the CIP and add $150,000.
You're not on.
I'd like to move to establish a new project in the CIP and add $150,000 to fund relocation of the Burroughs Cabin to Chisholm Beach Park through a transfer of funds from the 2016 PACE placeholder account.
Second.
Okay, it's moved and enthusiastically seconded. Would you like to speak to the motion?
Yeah, as Heather Treskis is just and the Eastside Heritage Center has just mentioned so well, this is a rare opportunity to really preserve the heritage of Bellevue. And if we don't preserve this house, what do we preserve in Bellevue? What kind of a message does that send to our community about the value of our history in Bellevue? So I think because of the short timeline, this it's going to have to be moved by June, and the owner has graciously offered to donate, I think, $10,000 for restoration after it's moved. It's a great opportunity for the city. So because of the short timeline is why I would like to put it in the mid-by budget and not wait till next year.
Okay. Any other comments? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, that will be amended into the CIP. And thank you again for this opportunity. I just think it's tremendous. And the timing worked for once. That was awesome. Okay, so next we have CIP item number three, and that is a proposal by Councilmember Lee to add a water feature to City Hall Plaza. Councilmember Lee, would you like to make a motion and put this?
Yeah.
What did I skip?
East Links there.
I'm looking at the agenda memo and going through, and I've got one northeast. I'm not going down. I'm not using that list. Don't worry, we won't miss it. Well, okay. Thank you though. Okay, Councilmember Lee, would you make the motion and put it in front of us?
Well, I've learned my lessons, so I don't know whether I want to propose my motion. I will rephrase. Thank you for being kind. You heard what I had to say, and you know I think that the key is we need to give clear direction to the staff. And I hope you guys, when I made the motion on the multicultural facility, you mean it, and you're going to support it. And the staff heard it clearly. When we have the most appropriate, I hope. I hope the the right timing, not the right, but I'm going to be here pushing you to come up with that, that whatever it takes. I don't want the staff to say, well, we don't have any money. The staff didn't give us any direction. We need $150,000. You didn't give it to us. So we're going to wait. So this is.
If you set up the motion, then the seven of us know what you're talking about, and nobody else does.
I think he's actually suggesting that he's not going to make a motion.
I'm debating whether you even want to set a motion, okay. Because that's an alternative way to handle this. Right. If you guys are there. The alternative way is that we don't need to. As long as, because one of the key elements in this is we have to work with Sound Transit to kind of face and coordinate this project, which makes sense. I don't want to go into much of a detail. So but I think after I speak it, you guys will understand. It's a feature that's important to the community, I think, to the feature of the city plaza, to the city hall. So, but the timing is such, I think, we need to coordinate with the Sound Transit staff. And as long as we understand, give the city staff direction, we don't have the timing sensitivity as some of you do, like moving of the borough house. Okay? Unless Sound Transit says, tomorrow we're going to do that. And then we need to get on the track. So I like to move to direct city staff. I hope you can support that. No money involved. I would like to move to direct city staff to continue to refine a proposal to find a cost-effective way to ensure that the final location of the Guanyin statue on the City Hall Plaza includes moving water in the design. The current design includes a still water pond. I'm interested in exploring ways to add movement to the water feature in a way that is conscious of costs and where we are in the design and construction process. After further refinement of options and exploration of timing and cost, staff will bring a proposal back to council consideration.
Second.
Then we can deliver at the time.
Okay.
Cost, timing, and all that stuff. So it's seconded. That's my proposal.
That was a very detailed and well-written motion. Any further discussion or comments? Does everybody understand the motion, Deputy Mayor Walls?
Well, I'm not sure I understand the motion. I think the idea is really interesting. I'm wondering, is anybody from staff here that could talk to us about what the status of the design of that project is? I think at a threshold level, that's what I'd be interested in. I don't think maybe some of you, like our Sound Transit board member, has seen the design or where it is today, but I have no idea. It's been like a year since I've seen it.
This afternoon, and we do think there are potentially some alternatives. Sound Transit is very far along in their design. They haven't let the contract yet, but they are very far along in their design. We think there are potentially alternatives, though, to look at ways we can add some work to potentially to their project, but we need to do some more thinking on our side about the scope of what this water feature really looks like to see what the best, most cost-effective way to get it done is. And we think there are some options to explore there, but Maher can go into a little bit more detail.
Well, I mean, just Kate said the Sound Transit design is pretty much almost at the 90-100% level. But that will not preclude us to continue conversation with Sound Transit. And also here at the staff level, we have some funding in R-159 we can use to further explore option.
Maybe.
God bless that R-159. The slush fund for everything.
Correct.
How about MND? Okay, so it would seem to me then that at our next Sound Transit update, since they're at 90 to 100% design, it wouldn't be any problem for them to come over and share with us what the design is.
Well, can I go back for a second, though? I am disconnecting with the discussion here. We had briefings last year, the year before, quite some time ago, where an architect and others and the city was there, came in and showed us the design for the plaza and took input from the council. Yeah?
That's right, and that's what Sound Transit has included in their design.
Okay.
This would be a change to that because that design includes the still water pond. What Councilmember Lee was interested in, as he articulated, was seeing if there are options to, in a way that isn't the $500,000 white paper option that was written up for the council, to add movement to that water. We think there are some opportunities that could be much less expensive than that, would be a city project to do at some point in time, but we would bring that back next year.
The only issue I was having was between the two of you, the answer to Deputy Mayor Wallace's question, what I was hearing was he thought that we had never seen this before, when in fact it was our design that we gave to Sound Transit that they are now using for their design.
That's right.
Okay. Well, okay, so maybe 90% means different to you than it does to me, but what we dealt with a year ago did not appear to be 90% design. So I'm just saying I think the design has evolved, and so in trying to talk to Councilmember Lee about this off camera, I kept coming back to, well, I have no idea where the design is today. So that would be helpful as a threshold. Beyond that, after understanding where the design is today and what the opportunities are for making changes to the design, I certainly would be open to looking at the suggestion. But it's really hard to say what to do until we know where things are.
Councilmember Lee is, and then Councilmember Robertson.
That's why my frustration is that I have always insisted, no matter, long time back, more than when the Sound Transit made their final design, I've added to the with the staff. Maybe it's my lack of communication with the staff. I'm not defending anybody or blaming anyone, but I've insisted there has to be moving water feature, and everybody on the council know that I've been talking about that, and the design never included it. And whatever design you had, I have no idea what you agree with Sound Transit. I have no idea what the final design is. We may think that we have final design. I have no clue until this discussion is taking place. So this is what we got, and Sound Transit already did this. Tough luck. No. And this is our building. This is our property. This is our city. We have to, So whatever fails, I don't care. I just want to be sure what we do going forward is the right thing. Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. I do recall when we spent quite a bit of time looking at the plaza design, working with a feng shui master, having briefings, I think we had at least two study sessions on it. And I do recall Councilmember Lee did want a water feature at that time, and I think we green-lighted the design without it. Mm-hmm. But I would like to see, I don't recall if we have put in funding for the expanded plaza over the visitor parking. Did we? No. Okay. No. I couldn't remember about that. But I wouldn't mind having an update on where we are in the process, looking at Sound Transit's plan. So if I'm not sure where I want to go with to support or not support the motion, I am okay with supporting it to get a briefing back to see where we are with the design, if the staff has ideas of further refinement that might make it better. I think that is something that we could certainly discuss, and certainly if it's our plaza, we can always change it in the future. But I hate to revisit a decision that we already made and when we've gotten so far down the road. But I am in favor of having a briefing on that at a study session and having a discussion of how we might make it better. It may be as simple as putting a pump in the pond to make the water ripple, or little lily pad sculptures that burble up, and that's $300. And that would be beautiful. My mind is open, but I don't want to give the wrong impression. If I vote in favor of the motion, that's how I would expect it. I guess a question for staff is, if we pass this motion, how would you anticipate this process coming back to council next year?
I think in light of this discussion, we'd need to do at least a study session to reground everyone in where we are with the current design and where Sound Transit is. We'll, in the meantime, do some staff work to come up with options, like you're talking about, a range of options that would be something we could either add to or bring in later after Sound Transit's work is done, that would achieve the objective of moving water, but at something that the council as a whole would support adding to the project. So we'll have to have at least one study session after we brainstorm some ideas that could be accomplished.
And I certainly would support that. And with that caveat, I will plan to vote yes on the motion.
Councilmember Stokes.
Yeah, just real quickly. I think it's just one of these opportunities to take a look and see if something that the council member is interested in
will work, and it sounds like there may be. It's not a really big thing. And actually, one of the benefits of this is that we're going to get a briefing and find out where Sound Transit is on this plaza, and that would be exciting. So so I think it's well worth looking at, even though it's kind of revisiting something. So
just do it. I appreciate this, but I just wanted to say one thing. This is such a minor thing that we're spending time to talk about it. I'm amazed.
I know.
I'm amazed. You know, I mean, I don't know what does that mean. You know, it's just amazed.
I'm going to start keeping a tally of all the times that people spend time complaining about how we're wasting time. Okay, that's number two for tonight by my colleagues. Sorry, that's... but, okay, so I'm going to call for the vote. I just... My two cents is this. I think there are multiple different ways, and there's a... It's been said, but there's a wide variety of ways you can have a moving water feature from a... you know, trash bag lined puddle in your own backyard with a water hose that comes out from something all the way up through the $500,000 fully functional, you know, 24/7. And so, yes, there is a wide range we can do this. I, like Councilmember Robertson, I just want to say I'm going to vote yes for this, but I really need it stated for the record and hopefully in a way that penetrates everyone's memory and we all remember this when it comes up again in the future. This very question about this water feature has been asked and answered by this council already. The staff has not ignored it. Sound Transit has not ignored it. They heard it. They heard the question. We voted. We voted no. And there's seven of us up here for a reason. If we don't agree with each other, that's not a sign of disrespect. It's just a sign of differences of opinions and priorities, and that's okay. That's why we're all here. So to ask again is fine. If there's a way to do it that is very low cost or no cost to the city. If there is not, I really hope this doesn't turn into another round of blaming Sound Transit for something, because this is on us. So, with that, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. We will hear more about the possibility of making the water...
Can I just set a record straight? I don't think we voted on something we know, and we didn't blame Sound Transit for it. I'm just saying that we did not have anything clearly that the council made it 7-0 vote. I did not vote for it, whatever it was. We voted for the general concept, but that's no detail. That vote isn't a detail. We don't have a plan in front of us. Council members asking, what do we have? What are we voting for? Don't have it.
You won your motion.
You won.
That doesn't matter. I just want to set the record straight.
We got it.
Okay. Next, we have the infamous where is it now? PWR 159, East Link Analysis and Development Options. Deputy Mayor Walz.
Thanks. Okay, so I will move option two. However, what's been given to me for the motion has blanks in it. So what should I just read the motion and say blank, or is there a number I should fill in?
Let me just look up the number for you here. So remaining in R159 under option two would be a total of $6.718 million over the six-year period. Moving to the land use planning area would be $2.652 million over the six-year period, leaving $1.3 million in the council contingency. Does that help you, Councilmember Wallace?
Okay, so the first blank is 2.652 and the second blank is 1. What?
What was the definition of your second
part? Well, the first one is Land Use Planning Project Fund.
Thank you.
2.65.
Land Use Plan, thank you. The Land Use Planning is the $2.652 million. The contingency is $1.317
million. $1.317 million. Okay.
Thank you.
I move to separate the East Link Development and Analysis CIP project into two new projects, a land use planning project funded at $2.652 million and an interlocal project contingency made up of $1.317 million. Staff shall return to Council in early 2016 seeking direction regarding authorization of the hiring of a fire captain position in support of this project.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Would you like to speak to the motion?
Yeah. So, I mean, we've talked about this at length over the last couple of meetings. I think 159 has become sort of a catch-all, and in my view, not appropriately so. I think this sort of sets out and separates the budget into appropriate categories, one for land use and puts the rest into a contingency,
where we can understand more about what's proposed to happen with the money and prioritize it in the ordinary budget cycle.
Okay. Councilmember Jelinek.
So the question that I have is regarding the fire captain position. When is that position needed to begin doing work?
Good evening, Fire Chief Mark Risen. We've met with Sound Transit a couple weeks ago to discuss this position, and they were very supportive of it starting sooner rather than later. So,
Chief, when is it needed? It's not whether they're in favor of it. It's from your professional standpoint as the fire chief, when is this position needed to start work?
They have indicated, and I would support it, that I do not want to fund it 1 minute sooner than we need it, but their discussions with us regarding the project indicated that, and I agree with it, that it would be sooner rather than later. I would say at least in the first quarter prior to them digging, because we do have to get this individual trained up to the processes that Sound Transit's going to use as far as tunnel excavation and the other skills that are needed for this project.
So I'll state my opinion here, and others can weigh in before I do anything in terms of motions. I personally prefer the option as proposed by the city manager. The issue is this is about expenditure, not about where the revenue comes from. I think that there is a legitimate discussion about where we will get that revenue from. Having said that, I think there is a legitimate need for these positions to move forward. In particular, I think the fire captain, as the chief has pointed out, I think we can have, and I know I've heard a discussion about whether or not it is too late to want Sound Transit to pay for this, or whether this absolutely should be paid for by Sound Transit. My position is we have not crossed a hard and fast line on that. There's a lot of negotiating to still go on in a project worth billions of dollars to be constructed here. But I think it's important that the expenditure authority be authorized for this position and for other positions. Whether they are split in the budget is fine with me, but I think we need to authorize it because it's an expenditure, not a decision on where revenue comes from.
Okay. Well, I just had a question about that.
Please go ahead.
So, did the money for the fire captain get moved into the contingency and the numbers that you provided?
Under option two, yes, Deputy Mayor Wallace, the fire captain gets moved into the contingency.
And so if it were determined that this was an appropriate city expense, then we could move it out of the contingency and fund it?
Yes, council has the authority to adopt or change the budget at any time.
Okay. Can I?
Go ahead.
It is a legitimate city expense. We're going to have to pay that fire captain to do this work. Whether it's paid for by taxpayers, whether it's paid for by Sound Transit, whether it's paid for in some other way, we need to pay to have that work done. The fire chief has told us this is something that is most likely a first quarter of 2016. First quarter of 2016 for the city council is one meeting away. I just have a problem. I'm not going to go there. That's not right. I think you have a legitimate concern and a very legitimate point about who should pay for this. But no matter who pays for it, the expenditure has to come out of our budget. So we have to do this work. And so my preference is to move that, to continue to move that forward.
Not to,
not to wait until the first quarter of 2016 to make a decision.
Councilmember Stokes.
Well, I understand what you're saying. I want to know. I'd like to get a very definitive answer on a date when this decision needs to be made. If we don't make it tonight, it says here early 2016, and you haven't said the first quarter of 2016.
It's a little bit of a moving target because it in part depends on Sound Transit's construction schedule, which doesn't have a date certain attached to it yet.
Okay.
So we're working off of the information that they give us.
Yeah, but I understand Councilmember Chemnack's point on this. Maybe we should, I think the other parts of it are strong, and it's a good idea to separate as proposed. I think it could go either way, and it's still not going to make any difference, frankly. We'll do what we need to do when the time comes on it.
Deputy Mayor, can we close it?
Well, yeah, so just to respond to this, I think, if the concern is about having the expense and not committing to the source, then we could amend the budget to call for a source from Sound Transit to fund the money that it takes to do it. And then that would be basically the same thing. We either have money in a contingency that we could elect to move in it if we determine that this is an appropriate expense with Bellevue taxpayer resources for something that was specifically negotiated out of the MOU and is solely related to the Sound Transit light rail project. And we haven't had any information that this is like, there's precedent for this. Really any more detail about what it is. In my view, this is completely out of bounds. I haven't said that about the other $8 million that was stuck into this line item. Basically all of the free resources that we have for the capital budget from the fact that the economy performed better than we budgeted. But this fire captain thing is just out of bounds. And so if we want to put in a revenue line item that says Sound Transit's paying for it, and then if they refuse to pay for it, we'll deal with it, fine. Or if you don't, and we want to put it in contingency and learn more about it and decide whether it's an appropriate expense and then move the money, fine. But it's inappropriate to imply that we're going to give them the money for this. It's their expense.
Okay, Councilmember Lee has a comment.
Thank you. I'm supportive of what Deputy Mayor is saying. I'm glad you're drawing a line on the sand. I agree. It is, but I also agree with John in the sense that we have to do it if we have to do it. So putting on the contingencies is one way of at least making some concession. We recognize it. It's important. It's got to be done, and we use it as a reserve. But first of all, the message is got to be clear. Got to be needed, and I agree with your rationalization statement that that's clear. And I support you.
So, okay, Councilmember Stokes, this is your third bite at the apple, so last bite.
Well, I thought we're okay. I move to amend the motion to place the fire captain position in the contingency fund.
It's already there. Yes.
So, what's the point?
So here's okay. So I'll give my position. And then if anyone who hasn't spoken wants to give theirs, and then I'm going to call for the vote. So when construction starts on this tunnel or on any of the elevated segments and something happens and there's a rescue that needs to be performed or a fire that needs to be put out, we're going to get the call. Our department is going to get the call, and we are going to respond to the call, whether we are well-trained or not. We're going to respond. And this position is about making sure that the fire department is trained to respond as safely as possible to those kinds of emergency situations. Whether or not we should be paying for the training and indeed for the response is a separate question. And I agree with Councilmember Chelmanac on that point. It is one that in some ways was negotiated during the Sound Transit negotiations, and it was not something – it was. I was there. I was at the meetings.
Sitting right next to you.
And they did not agree to pay it. Now, we're going to have this battle. We can have this discussion. We're already having this discussion. But tonight we're talking about the expenditure line in the CIP, and I do not personally want to be responsible. I don't want to be the one responsible when the call comes and our folks respond and they haven't been trained – because we wanted to make a point about who should pay for this. So I'm going to vote no on the motion. Councilmember Robertson.
I'll just weigh in very, very, very briefly, given the hour. Should I move to extend the meeting?
Probably a good idea, yes.
And we have an executive session after, so I'll move to extend to 11 and hope that we're done a lot sooner.
Okay.
Second.
All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Motion's extended.
So, I would vote to support the motion because the money is in the contingency. We have been told during this mid-buy process, although I share some of the concerns, I had offered when we were discussing this the fourth option as a middle ground. And if this fails, I'll like to offer that again. But I think that we can look at this next year. While we are doing the mid-buy, we were told we don't have time to really drill down on this one issue. So that's why the option of putting it in the contingency came about. I certainly think that when we, with the length of the meetings tonight and next week, we should be clearing a lot of stuff off the mm-hmm. agenda, and we'll have time to drill down on this in a more in-depth manner in January and get that funded. And in the history of Sound Transit, have they ever started construction earlier than they've said they were going to? So I think we have at least a month to decide this. Would you think that's fair, Chief Risen?
I could live with that, yes.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
So it was 4-3 by my count in favor, and the motion carries. So that, by my reckoning, perfects the attachment to the budget and enables us to move into each of the five action items, ordinances, and resolutions that we need to approve this this matter. So, ordinance number 6263. Do you have presentations on these, or we're just going to?
We could, but I think they've already been discussed. The first one is just okay. The land use fees, which you were in favor of when it came to study session.
Okay. So, first one is ordinance 6263. Is there a motion?
Move adoption of ordinance 6263.
Second. Second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next, we have resolution 9033.
Move adoption of resolution 9033.
Second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries.
Move adoption of ordinance 6264.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved to adopt Ordinance 6264, establishing the regular and voted property tax. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
Move adoption of Resolution 9034.
Second.
Okay, all those in favor of approving Resolution 9034, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right.
Move adoption of Ordinance 6265.
Second.
Okay, before I call for the vote on this one, is there any comments or questions? This is the final roll-up that adopts the 2015 to 2016 biennial budget and 2015 to 2021 capital investment plan.
I presume that this will include the changes that were made tonight.
Correct.
As amended?
As well, it, actually, we didn't amend the ordinance. We just amended the attachment to the ordinance, so it's okay as is. One question, because they're here tonight, just confirming that the this includes the music works that we talked about at the last. Okay, this is a contribution. Very good. All right. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Mid-biennium budget is adopted. Yay. All right. Good job. All right. Thanks, everyone, for your patience and sticking with us through it all. Now, we have one item of unfinished business, and that is item 12A.
So good evening, Mayor Bowditch, Council members. Just by way of background, the Vision Zero matter under unfinished business was discussed with Council at the November 23rd meeting. Council meeting at that meeting, staff received feedback on this particular matter and was directed to bring back a statement of endorsement with regard to Vision Zero. And included in your desk packet is a revised resolution based on council feedback that we received today. So that is in your desk packet. And tonight, staff is seeking the council's direction on this particular matter. And so that's pretty much it. And we're here to answer any questions you might have.
I can't, actually. I would call for a motion, yeah.
I would move the adoption of Resolution 9035, endorsing Vision Zero.
Second. Okay. I'll just say I thank everyone for their understanding. I know this was a little quick, but it's a very important statement to strive for zero traffic deaths and serious injuries on Bellevue streets by 2030. It's certainly a timely item, and I know that there's still a tremendous amount of work to be done to integrate this into the comprehensive plan, into our bicycle implementation initiative, and a number of other things, but I think that it is a good start to signal that we have this policy goal of really prioritizing human safety and human life. So I appreciate the motion and the second. Will all those in favor please? Oh, I'm sorry, Councilmember Lee.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. Yeah. No, you go ahead.
I, in the spirit of, goodwill, cooperation, everything, I want to say very much about this. I think this is a great, great thing, great vision, great effort. But I just think that, after what we're through, discussion, overtime and all that, this, doesn't seem to, deserve the level of this deliberation, discussion as we do. But, it's the right thing to do. It's the right way to do. But for Bellevue, we are pretty much there. I think the police, the officers, traffic people, everybody understand that. So I think it should be just a unanimous declaration of support, and that would be adequate. But I'm happy to support this ordinance in the spirit of doing the right things.
Thank you, Councilmember Lee.
So, otherwise, I was, not take any action, but I will go along with it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right. The motion carries. Thank you again for that. And that is the end of our regular session. Is there any continued oral communications? There's three people here from the public. Would any of you like to speak to us? No? Okay. Thank you. There's no new business. We do have an executive session on one item of personnel, approximately 1 hour. We will adjourn from the executive session and not reconvene. So we will be in recess until we adjourn from the executive session.